Backseat Producers, Episode 131, The Blues Brothers. We're 306 miles from Chicago. I got a half a bottle of whiskey, full bandwidth. It's dark outside, and I'm wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Daryl.
And this is David.
And we are the Backseat Producers.
Go anywhere else. Tony just finished watching season one of Lost.
Yes,
what'd
I
you
have.
Think?
I still have problems with some of the characterizations, but I'm told that's because I don't know all the characterizations yet. I call bullshit and say that it is bad writing and poor motivations written into the story that they have to, a couple of episodes later, backtrack and try to explain. But that's just me.
That's just his opinion.
I mean, that's kind of how it feels. Because you see somebody do something that just makes absolutely no sense. And then two episodes later, they try to explain why they did that asinine thing.
Yes. Lost suffers a lot from two different things. One, I am absolutely convinced in the first three seasons they had no idea where they were going with things. So their tactic to get around that is they would write an episode, and then the episode would happen, and then they would be like, oh crap, we have to have another episode.
Yeah.
And so what they did was they got the
brainstorm. I think they were writing every episode like it was their last.
Yeah. So they got the brainstorm cloud out, and they're like, how can we relate this guy to that guy? You know what? We can't. So we'll just draw another line to this guy and then make that guy relate to that guy, so we get like 2 degrees of separation between these two people.
Yeah, the way everyone intermeshed that they've described, it borders on ridiculous.
Yes. Which actually becomes much cooler later.
Because they have to explain why.
Yeah.
I mean that's kind of how it feels. It's like we've written ourselves into a corner. Now we're it almost feels like a writing exercise where the professor has written the classroom into a corner and says, now get yourself out of it.
Your entire grade depends on it.
Yeah, and the way they're getting themselves out of their problems is well done. I'll give you that. Also, the unevenness of the endings of the episodes is bothersome, because you'll have like 2 episodes in a row where they end on a really nice cliffhanger that makes you want to jump into the next episode. And then the third one, it just kind of fizzles to an end. And it's like, okay, I guess I should probably go on to the next episode then.
Yes, that is also an issue. It's kind of like you're looking at a mosaic, like when you're zoomed in really far, and then as you pull back, you see more and more disjointed pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you start getting much further out, you're like, oh, there's an actual design to this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is cool to see.
It's been cool to see. I'm still watching. I've watched, you lent me all of season one, and I've watched 2 episodes beyond season one through Netflix. So I'm still going.
At the tail section?
Not yet.
Okay. All right, well, I will continue to get updates as you progress through
yes,
the series,
yes,
Tony.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, so next week, as we just moments ago discussed, we are going to be watching
Moon. M-O-N. That spells
moon.
Next week.
And for everyone's safety and sanity, we will not be using images of Adam David's ass.
Don't promise that. I think Ustream actually has a nudity filter, so
I want to see how it works.
Me too.
The part of Adam's ass will be played by a small midget who we picked up off the street.
And as you may or may not be able to tell, Daryl is going through puberty.
Yeah, with what's left of his voice.
All right. So this movie, what'd you think?
I love this movie. I have so much fun watching this movie.
Which is Blues Brothers, I guess.
It is Blues Brothers. Yeah, I guess we should probably reference that. For the three people that didn't get my intro reference.
Daryl?
I didn't really enjoy this movie as much when I watched it. I enjoyed the music part, but kind of fell flat with me.
I didn't enjoy the music part. In fact, that's what I enjoyed least. I was like, if we're going to be a musical, let's be a goddamn musical. If we're not going to be a musical, let's not be a musical. I like my food separated into sections on my plate. I don't like overlap. Overlap is where the poop comes in. That's where the overlap is. On the whole, I enjoyed the movie, but I also was doing other things while it was on, so...
The one thing that I can't say about the movie is the beginning of it is really slow.
Yeah, and there's
some uneven pacing in the movie where they do things that just take a really long time to get through. The whole opening sequence with Jake checking out of prison and getting out of prison,
is an allegory for intercourse. Let's just put it on the table. That's how it works. So the beginning is you're getting all warmed up, and then nothing happens. And then his brother shows up, and you're like, ah, boner shrinker time. But then they get in the car, and they're driving, and you're like, this is going to go somewhere good.
Then we have that early climax of him jumping the bridge.
That's right. And then he needs 15 minutes. But this never happens to me.
All right.
My problem was that I've seen this movie back in the 80s. So it was a killer and whatnot. But 30 years on, it's not as funny as it was. I mean, either my tastes have changed that much or I've just seen too much of these guys in the preceding 30 years that the category is kind of lame.
Yeah, I mean, this movie has had other movies that have kind of tried to
emulate it to a degree and failed miserably.
Yeah, but at the same time, they kind of take away from this one too, because one of the problems of this one is its pacing. Its pacing is really slow.
Its pacing is slow and fast, and on top of that, it's both ridiculous and trying not to be as ridiculous at the same time.
Yeah, they do things like the scene in the church where Jake gets hit by the light of God and is glowing.
That was ridiculous.
And that was ridiculous.
And that was funny. Everything that they did ridiculous was funny. But then they slacked off and they're like, oh, let's actually tell a story here. No, you should have just stayed ridiculous.
Well, that's just it. When the parts that really work are when the characters you expect, like Ray Charles, shows up in the music store. And, you know, just ad libs the whole way through.
I'll give you the black keys for free.
Yeah,
I'll
throw in the black keys.
Yeah.
Or James Brown, you don't expect him to do a gospel preacher.
Yep.
I mean, that was a total turnaround from him, if you know anything about him. But, I mean, when the characters you don't expect to do anything come in there and just totally ad lib their whole part, they're the ones that shine. The two major characters just kind of walk through.
Yeah.
I don't disagree with that.
No.
I don't like Dan Aykroyd. That's not true. I don't have a problem with Dan Aykroyd, but god damn, his accent in this movie was just...
He used the Chicago accent.
Yeah, I was done with that as soon as he started talking. I was like, whoa, that's gotta end now.
All right, so this movie had a lot of cameos.
Yeah, a bunch.
Oh, the whole movie is one giant cameo.
Yeah, I mean, from all the musicians, you had Cab Calloway,
Aretha Franklin, Ray Charles,
James Brown.
I don't know who any of these people are.
Henry Gibson.
Yeah.
He even had Frank Oz stuffed in there, too.
Frank Oz, Steven Spielberg, Carrie Fisher.
Sure.
She was more of a character than I can't know.
She did have more of a character. Yeah.
She's a.
And apparently,
before she got crazy looking too.
Yeah. Well, this was around the time of Empire.
Yeah. Well, 1980.
This was the I don't want to be Leia forever movie.
Yeah.
I got bad news.
Very bad girl.
I want to be a psycho.
Well, you got it.
And the guys who did the cameo parts actually did a better acting job. Well, maybe because they were real actors, too.
Well, I mean, it didn't take much. Like, John Belushi and Jim Belushi?
John.
All right. That was Jim Belushi.
Jim Belushi's his brother.
Is that fat guy who still has that TV show?
According to Jim.
Yeah. Screw that guy. Although his wife is really hot on that show. Like, unnaturally. That's part of the problem with me watching that show, because it's like, that guy can't get that chick. That just doesn't work out. So,
I think that's the point of that whole show.
That's the punchline to the show. Yeah. Like, at the end of every episode, they just flash the text of this. This guy can't get that chick. See you next week. John Candy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
He's
yeah.
The parole officer.
Mm-hmm.
All the actors in the film who weren't actors actually did a better job ad-libbing their lines through this. Although you can tell when they're really struggling. Well, not struggling, but they're reading the stuff rather than acting it.
Yeah, there's a couple of scenes that are kind of rough.
Forced.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like John Belushi. I don't find him funny. I think that if he was alive today, I would find him hilarious and would have party with him.
If you were alive
then
yeah. You would think he was funny and want to party with him.
Yeah, because every character he has, I want to imagine, is his personality.
Well,
and that's the type of personality that I like to hang with.
In this movie, his personality is dialed way down. Because you saw him at his peak when he was a Saturday Night Live. He was a total crazy man on stage.
I saw
Animal House. They did not let him cut loose on this.
Yeah, he was.
And that was the sad part.
He was held way back.
Ugh. I think they put him in a box and only fed him through the bunghole.
What's going on over there? It's like your rebellious teenage years. So, I mean,
he's going to get angry and stop speaking to us soon.
Yeah. Well, I'm going through puberty, you know? Yeah. Like, my voice will start
squeaking. Start slamming doors. And
comedy is such a hard thing because it's so cultural and it's so topical that doesn't age well. Like that is what's teaching that is what looking or watching all of these older comedy movies, except for Airplane ages well.
Airplane does age well.
Because
Airplane
is one huge pratfall.
Yeah, Airplane is still hilarious.
Well, it's also very smartly done. Mm-hmm. It doesn't low humor sometimes. Even the way it goes about doing the low humor is clever.
Yeah, because you know what they're
like using
do, but
like using Otto funny. Like, you know, doing the fellatio joke with Otto and her having to blow him back up. Very clever. Low humor, but very cleverly done.
Yeah, but the thing is,
we'll never age.
No.
But she's blowing up the doll, big smile.
And then he smiles.
Didn't expect that.
We'll never age. So, I mean, that was a lot. Of, I mean, the driving around, and then they jump the river, and it's like, all right. And then the whole awkward scene with the nun.
The penguin. Yeah. Had to go visit the penguin.
Kathy Bates, was it?
No. No, it wasn't Kathy Bates.
Oh.
I don't remember. But it was. I know it wasn't Kathy
Bates. Oh, yeah, it was. And I think the funniest part of that scene is not when they're, like, she hits one, and then the other guy curses, and then she hits him, and she's just going back and forth. I think the funniest part of the scene is when they're running away, and hopefully she doesn't get out of the desk. He's just trying to scoot the desk away from
Rolls
her.
Down the stairs in the chair.
Mostly because then that great scene, trying to escape.
Then the great scene where they're at the bottom of the stairs and they're looking up, and there's this really cool shot of like the light on the cross,
yeah.
Throwing
looking,
the shadow and looking down
Jesus
at them.
Jesus looking disapproving.
And then she floats back into the room and the door slams. I mean, the ridiculous little things like that are just completely unexplained. They walk into the room and the door closes behind them. And there's no one there.
Yeah.
See, that's if they had gone full ridiculous all the time, it would have been so much funnier.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because there are just some scenes like like at the end of the movie when the Nazis drive off the freeway, and then like they're only like a story, and, ground, yeah. And then like they're level like the top of the Sears Tower, they crash the fucking street.
Well, let's all talk about the musical cutscenes when they jump into their full blown musical scores. I mean, some great dancing and cameo scenes by some blues greats there. But they sometimes those transitions don't seem to work quite well.
It went on.
They
for
don't need to. I mean, yeah. I'm going to go ahead and throw down and start defending this now because
you go right ahead.
I do like this movie. I really do like this movie. And to the point when we said we were going to watch the movie, I had to go back to because I keep a list of the movies that I own because it got to the point where I couldn't remember. I stopped being able to remember what I've bought and what I haven't because I thought I owned this and apparently I don't. But anytime this movie's on, I will start watching it and finish watching it from whatever point it starts at. This is one of this kind of movie for me.
It's a nonlinear movie.
It is a nonlinear movie, so it works. You don't have to.
At any point, it still makes sense.
Well,
and really, the ending matters.
Only the ending matters, and the beginning, 15 minutes of it. You know, once they leave the Penguin, the story is all about them getting money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
it's a very simple plot.
It's a very simple plot. He promised to visit the Penguin when he got out of prison, so he goes and visits the Penguin. She tells him
they need money.
They need money. We're gonna lose the school, orphanage. Lose the orphanage.
Here's your quest. Go do this.
Yes. Yeah. I was making jokes on Twitter that this should be a D&D campaign because this whole thing is set up like that. Here's a quest. Here are your options for how you're gonna do it. How do you proceed? You go to the first one. You fail. You fail to collect your bounty. Go to the next quest. And that's kind of how the whole story proceeds.
Or like an 80s scroller. Adventure story.
Side-scroller, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Princess just, is just in replace, another castle.
Just replace Link with Jake Blues.
And then they intersperse the story with moments of music.
Which is cool.
And the music is good.
The music is good, but it's awkwardly handled. Like, the whole church thing, like I can see it, and then it keeps going, and then it keeps going.
Well, and then they do things like, all of a sudden, the guy dancing on the ground is doing flips in the air off of a trampoline that you don't see, but the way they shoot it as if he's just jumping up off the wood floor. I mean, that's the kind of ridiculousness.
John Belushi does backflips into the middle of the church, yeah. You know.
But he's seen the light, so he can do anything.
He's touched by God.
Do you see the light? The band! Do you see the light? The band! What light? So, then they go to try to start putting the band back together, and they realize most of the band is now working a lounge act.
Uh-huh.
That one of the guys is leading. So they go to this like hotel bar.
Holiday Inn.
Yeah.
It says, "Welcome, exterminators."
Yeah. They go to the hotel bar. They get the band. They start getting the band together, but they find out there's a problem.
Couple other guys have gone on to do other things.
Yes. Your quest now is to
retrieve
the other party members to get them to join the pug. So
the pug.
So they now have to go get these other members. Which the whole sequence in the diner was that the next one? Was it the diner or the music store?
The restaurant's next. There's a restaurant and a diner.
Yeah. The restaurant's next, where they go to the nice restaurant.
Yeah. The restaurant was funny.
They pick up their maitre d'.
Yeah. And the restaurant scene's funny, where they come in, they start ordering this ridiculous amount of very expensive food and just harassing the customers next to them.
Yeah, that was when they let John Belushi...
Your women!
Be John
Belushi. How much for your women?
How much for your women?
Little girl.
The little girl, how much I want to buy your women?
That was funny.
All right, so...
Also, that joke went on too long. By the way.
But at that point, actually, the length of the joke made it more funny. For me.
It got to a point where it didn't escalate anymore, though. So it's like it kind of plateaued and then just maintained. And it was like, all right.
It didn't last that long, though.
That, it felt like fucking eternity to me, Tony. I see time differently than you do.
Ever.
Like, all of it at the same time.
Put your blue penis back in your pants.
It's so big. Which, the restaurant to me did not hold a candle to how funny the diner scene was.
The diner scene is hilarious. If the whole movie was the exact same way the diner scene was done,
it would
be so much better. The getting Aretha Franklin to say some of the stuff she said was brilliant.
Oh my god!
Well, also you to see Aretha Franklin dressed down so much,
yeah,
to the rather frumpy waitress look.
The best line in the entire movie, Elwood says to her, "Your domestic problems are not as important as us trying to get the band back together."
He has his priorities right.
What I love is when they're so they come in and they start ordering food. And she goes to Elwood. What do you want?
Toast.
White
bread.
Toast.
White
just
toast.
Toast.
No, what do you want on it? Do you want butter? You want jelly? No, ma'am. Nothing on it. Just dry. And she kind of gives him this look like, you crazy cracker. She goes, he said, do you have any fried chicken? And she gives him this, we got the best fried chicken in the city or in the state or something. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, I'll have four fried chickens. Do you want legs or wings?
Four
fried chickens.
And a Coke.
And a Coke, yeah.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. I'm with. Yeah. And the way they say it's so deadpan. Like, they're absolutely serious.
Well, they do that a couple times.
Well, I believe John Belushi can eat four fried chickens.
You know what? There's actually a scene before all this, too, where they do pretty much the same thing, where they visit where those guys were staying.
Oh, yeah, at Elwood's place?
The boarding house.
Yeah.
And they talk to the woman, and are you boys police? No, ma'am, we're musicians. I mean, the whole thing, they play the whole thing so deadpan. It's almost like there was a couple of scenes that they were going to play the Blues Brothers in this way, and then they didn't, you know? Do you see what I'm saying? Especially the scene, and it's specifically that scene and the scene in the diner. Because other than those two places,
it's like they shot half the movie and they're like, this is gonna be a serious movie, and then the other half of the movie they're like, this movie's gonna be shit if we try and do this seriously, so we need to make this funny as shit, and so then they just reshot certain sections of the movie.
And re-edited it all back together.
My foot is cramping up, and I have no idea why. It hurts.
So they get they place their order, and the cook realizes
who it is.
Yeah, we get these two. What did she say?
Oh, she walks in. He said, "What these? You know, these two crazy asses."
We got two honkies.
Two honkies dressed up like Hasidic diamond merchants. That's it.
And he reads off the first one. The first one ordered toast. Oh, that's Elwood.
That's Elwood, yeah.
Oh, and he was four whole chickens and a goat. Oh, Jake. It's like he's seen this before. He's going to, oh, surprise.
So he comes out, and Aretha gives him his, you know, you better think about what you're doing. You better think about where we're going. And then she busts into think.
Song and dance.
The song and dance. All the women there's nobody in this diner until the song starts, and then all these people are just there and start dancing. The best part
was the funniest part.
Like, the best part of that though was they're in the middle of like the full on dance. All of a sudden, I mean, the whole time Jake and Elwood are sitting
just
at the
sitting
bar,
there?
Then all of a sudden they're in the middle of the dance. They're up dancing and like leading the dance of the background dancers. Then they flash away from them, they come back, and they're just sitting there again.
See, that was a ridiculous song. That's why it was funny. The thing in the church I didn't think was that ridiculous.
There were moments of it being ridiculous.
But it wasn't full-on ridiculous.
No.
The whole song and dance in the diner was ridiculous. The whole diner scene was hilarious and ridiculous.
Yeah, it was. With the church, they took something that, okay, having a big song and dance in a church like that doesn't seem ridiculous until you throw in the element of
people flying all
Jake
over the
getting
place.
Jake getting hit by the light, Elwood not knowing what the hell's going on, and then the guy who's doing backflips in the air. But by that point, that wasn't quite ridiculous enough. You know, it would have taken something more akin to the church roof opening and the finger of God pointing down and saying,
like the Monty
you
Python
need to
God
get
hand.
The band back together. You know, something just on that level of ridiculous.
On the level of Monty Python ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't remember exactly when this happened sequentially, but Nazis are in the movie somewhere. And
they're a little ways down.
They're a little farther down.
I thought it was around the time where they're going out looking for people. It was before they went to the diner.
No, it was afterwards.
Where were they on their way to then?
I think they were trying to meet the band at their first gig.
First gig was in that way out of the way place.
Well, yeah, Country
at
Bunker.
Country Bob's.
Country Bob's Country Bunker.
Yeah, Bob. Yeah, that's it.
Ma'am, what kind of music do you play here? Oh, honey, we got both kinds, country and western. Again, the sequence in the bar.
It doesn't. Yeah.
Was ridiculous, especially when they start playing their music and they're just getting pelted with beer bottles.
Yeah, but
they shut the lights
that,
off.
The thing about that is wasn't, regardless of what music they're playing, they were still getting pelted by beer bottles.
Yeah.
Just more so when they weren't doing the country and western.
And the thing about it was, like, I was looking at it, and like I got three monitors, so I was looking at it on my third monitor. I was looking at it, and like I had to back it up a little bit. There's nothing between like John Belushi and Dan Aykroyd and the exploding glass.
Well, there's a chicken wire.
Yeah. There's supposed to be chicken wire.
Chicken wire there, but the glass is still hitting the chicken wire and then exploding onto the actual actors.
Yeah.
It's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
It's a rough bar.
Well, yeah, I know, but safety concerns of some sort?
Oh, they would have used sugar glass or something.
What the hell is sugar glass?
Whenever you break glass, like break a bottle in a movie, it's not real glass.
It's just made of... frozen sugar.
Yeah, it's like frozen sugar. It's like crystallized sugar. So when you bang it against something, it shatters like glass.
This is bullshit.
Because if you try to break a real bottle like that, you break your wrist before you break the bottle.
What?
If you take a real glass bottle and you try to break it on the edge of a table, you'll snap your wrist before you'll break that bottle.
I don't know about that.
You will more likely dent the table heavily before you break the glass.
I gotta get drunk and try this.
That's your assignment for the weekend.
Chris, we need to have a party at your place. It is Mardi Gras. Although they're not gonna serve any glass down there anyway. Most of all that like plastic.
We'll let Sarah break glass over people's heads. See what happens.
Gen Con is coming.
Well, that could be your project too. Make some candy glass bottles and have a simulated bar fight.
Nah, if I'm gonna spend that much time freezing sugar, I'm gonna eat it afterwards.
Be in the bottle.
Anyway, so after the bar scene where they take the bar,
they didn't realize they had to pay for their beer.
They didn't realize that that's not. So he says, "Blah blah blah, I need to pay for it." He's like, "Oh, I'll just go get the money from our guys." They go outside, and then the sequence of events confuses me. I have a couple complaints with this. So one, he leaves, and then the other guys show up. They give the impression that it's like 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Why is the other band just now showing up? Like where were they?
Late.
And like they don't seem to be preoccupied with the fact like they show up and they're like, "All right, we're ready to go on." Like they're on time. All right, that's fine. So then I think like John Belushi goes and he talks to him, and so I think that he's gonna do something.
Yeah,
I think that there's a plan afoot, and I'm like, I don't really see how he's going to dupe these guys into paying his bill, but this is going to be funny. So he does it.
Yeah, because there is an implication of, you guys just wait here. Let me go talk to the owner and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he... Yeah. And then he doesn't go anywhere with it. He's like, let's just get out of here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that was more to set up the plot of having the country musicians chasing them also. Because Bob jumps in the camper with them, in the Winnebago with them, and takes off, and then they blow past the cop, who pulls out, smacks into the Winnebago, and trashes it.
Right, that was my complaint with that section. It was funny. I think probably the funniest thing about that is that I was expecting something else, and then they just walked away from it, and I was like, "Oh, the joke was on me."
for me, the funniest part of that whole sequence was when they switched to country western music. And they do the theme from Rawhide and Stand By Your Man. Stand By Your Man is, I mean, that's just a classic in the movie. I love that part.
So then they leave there. I don't remember what happens after this.
The band has decided they're going to give him one more chance. Because, hey, it's Jake and Elle. We're going to give him one more shot. We owe it to him to give him one more chance.
But they better come across.
Yeah. But
so then they go talk to...
almost like an agent?
He was their old manager.
The old manager.
He was their agent from before Jake got sent to prison.
So Jake ends up blackmailing him and then giving him a huge gig.
No, he didn't blackmail him. He decided that was so cute, he was going to give him a shot.
That's him giving in to blackmail. That's what that means. I've got pictures of you, or I know about you and some other chick. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
Your offer now sounds very appealing. Marty Slime.
You had Sarah at breaking people's heads.
And then, like, you only see Jake and Owen, that guy in the sauna, but then, like, the entire band is there. It's like 15 people. So
I think they were a little untrustworthy of them. At that point, they wanted to hear this deal go down, too.
Well, and they kind of know how Jake and Elwood operate. They know that they're snake oil salesmen on top of everything else.
I didn't get that impression at all from the movie. I thought they were very upstanding people, Tony. I don't know why you would do them that disservice, slandering them.
Armed robbery?
So, then becomes a musical montage of getting the word out.
Right.
That lasts for a very long time.
When all the chicks on the beach walk up, and it's ladies' night.
Then they're on the road.
Now, we actually, at some point before this, had seen Carrie Fisher.
Yes.
Well, as mysterious chick who kind of is stalking them, and... shooting rocket launchers at them.
Rocket launchers, flamethrowers.
She steps guns. Out of the shadows and then suddenly just cuts loose with heavy artillery. We kind of see her just one scene by herself.
She is a well-armed ninja.
No, she's a well-armed hairdresser.
Well, who doubles as a ninja?
Ninja. Well, she's got apparently a thing for the boys, and she's trying to whack them seriously. But every time she does... her plane kind of goes awry.
At one point, we're like, they're asleep, and then she blows up the building, and then they just get up and walk away. Oh man, we got.
But it's just as the cops. It's just as the cops are getting there too. They're just about to get them, and
she blows up the entire building
around them and takes out the cops for them, so they can get away.
It happened. I saw it.
They register their address as Wrigley Field. Fantastic. There was a sequence real early in the movie where they talk about the old Bluesmobile and how and this kind of sets up just how ridiculous a good part of the movie is, where Jake gets out of prison and he said, so where's the caddy? And Elwood's like, what caddy? What are you talking about? He said, the caddy, where is the caddy? He said, oh, I traded it for a microphone. You traded the Bluesmobile for a microphone? So,
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. My brother picks me up from prison in a police car. Hey, I got it at an auction.
In Mount Prospect.
Yeah, in Mount Prospect. And Jake's just going off on him. Elwood doesn't say a word. They go up to the drawbridge. Doesn't say a word. Pulls around the barricade. Floors it, goes up over the drawbridge.
Jumps the gap.
Jumps it. It's cop. It's got cop everything.
It's like the car from Supernatural. It's a third character.
Yeah, the car becomes part of it, and regularly they get into police chases.
Regularly the car gets beat to shit, but it's always fine in the next scene.
This movie had the most wrecked vehicle at the time. It had the most wrecked vehicles of any movie. I don't know.
They caught a lot of flack for that too,
because they were all cop. They were all cop cars.
Yeah. That last chase was just a pile of cop cars, and then as soon as the pile of cop cars grew so large, they had to move on, and then they had to bring in Nazi cars.
Yeah.
So then they can get a Nazi pile up.
Yeah. So at some point we run into the Illinois Nazis. Damn it! I hate Illinois Nazis.
The worst kind.
They're there. Blues Brothers antagonize them, and then the Nazis want to kill them.
Yeah, so at this point, the Blues Brothers have the state police, the Cook County police, the
country western,
the
band.
Country western band,
good old boys, good old
country boys. Bob, and the Illinois Nazis all
crazy
chasing
chick.
Them. Well, yeah, and the Terry crazy Fisher. Chick, which at this point they don't really even know about. Mm-hmm. They just happen to know that somebody's shooting at them, but they don't really know who.
Yep.
Apparently they've been shot at so many times before it has become...
They don't even question the fact. They hear the rocket launch, they fall to the ground, the room blows up next to them, and they're like... They don't question it at all.
They just keep going.
They just keep going.
So, we're hurtling towards the conclusion.
The conclusion.
Diarrhea for our big musical number.
Jake and Elwood run out of gas. They're going to be late to the big event. They are late. There's an incredibly long scene at a gas station. Incredibly long scene at a gas station where they're waiting for gas. Elwood picks up some chick.
It happens to be Twiggy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is. But the gas eventually comes. And then they go.
Elwood makes a date for later.
Elwood makes a date for later, although, like every other woman in the movie... They quickly disappear and are left by the men.
Yes.
Quickly abandoned by the men.
They blow up the gas station.
Which I am fine with. What?
The gas station blows up for no apparent reason.
Did it really?
Yeah. There was a trail of gasoline that led back to the gas station and it blows up. This huge explosion that by this point everybody has left the gas station and the gas station just explodes. So there's no reason for it in the plot. There's absolutely no reason. It's completely ridiculous. But there's this huge, awesome explosion.
I don't know how I missed this.
Because it was on your third monitor and you were playing WoW on the other two?
No, I was working on the other two.
Okay. See, I was giving you the benefit of the doubt there.
I wouldn't do that. I'll disappoint you every time. So they show up and then they pull into this tunnel. And I'm like... Where the hell are they now? Like, can't we just move the plot on? And this was actually really clever. So it pulls back from the tunnel, and they're under the bridge, and then on the bridge there's like 50 cop cars just waiting for them. And I was like, all right, that wasn't bad.
So meanwhile, back at the stadium, or the concert hall that they booked, mm-hmm. the band is all set up, the hall is full of people.
And they're all getting anxious.
And Cab Calloway is there. And
we got to stall him. And then, like, it flashes immediately to him in a white suit.
Well, and he says, you guys know Minnie the Moocher? And the one guy says something like, I knew a hooker named such and such. It was,
that guy was awesome.
No, the song.
And
they're like, yeah. The curtain opens, and they're just guys sitting around with their equipment in regular clothes, and Cab Calloway's in fairly regular clothes. When the curtain opens, he's in a white suit. They've got this whole big band set up where everybody's behind a little facade booth. They're all in white. They're all dressed to the nines. And it just like happens instantly. It's another one of these great, ridiculous moments. That everybody gets into, and they do this really cool rendition of Minnie the Moocher.
Which only Cab Calloway can do.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently there was a remake of it. There was like a disco version that came out at the time. And they wanted to get him to be in the movie to do Minnie the Moocher. And he wanted to do his disco
classic.
Version. No, he wanted to do he wanted to do the disco version because that was what he was trying to promote at the time.
Oh.
And they're like, no. we want to do the classic version because we're the Blues Brothers, you know. I mean, they even derived disco earlier in it when they're asking about all the locations they can play when they're talking to the booking agent guy. And he said, no. They're all discos now. You're not going to be able to play your kind of music there. So they even kind of deride disco.
Well, at this time, disco had it reached its crescendo. It was on the downhill slide.
Yeah.
Everybody was busting up on it.
Thank God.
That stuff all happened.
So,
allegedly.
It did. I was there.
Sorry.
Club 54.
Get out. That happens.
I was 8.
Then Jake and Elwood show up, and they sing and dance for a very long time.
Well, they do two numbers.
They do more dancing at first than singing, too.
Well, that's when we see the real Blues Brothers in action as a band.
Yeah.
That we've been expecting all this time. And that's when they start, the real acting begins.
Yeah, and the police all show up. They're lining the place. They're going, completely surrounded. And they're all inside. And John Candy's like, they're not going anywhere.
I've never even seen him play.
Yeah. Let's just see the show. So they start the show. At some point they go backstage, and this guy makes him a record offer.
It's for $5,000 to $10,000.
For $10,000, they take half the money. They said, "Here, give this money to raise music for our equipment rental. Yep. The rest of it goes to the band." Now if we just had a way out of here. And he's like, I used to be a bouncer here. I know the way out.
Just go through the CD tunnel.
Yeah, go through the CD tunnel. So they go through the CD tunnel and run into Carrie Fisher. And we kind of get her story. She was left at the altar by Jake. And Jake breaks down. This is the one time he takes his glasses off during the movie. And he gives her the string of excuses and lies. I was at a gas. I had a flat tire.
I had a friend come in from out of town. I was robbed.
The cab never came. And he takes his glasses off and gives her these puppy dog eyes. And
melts her.
It melts her for a moment. And they're able to escape.
Doesn't make it out. He just drops. She's like, come on, Elwood, let's get out of here.
And there Elwood's to say, oh God, we're all going to, we're going to die any moment here. He's kind of lost his faith in Jake to get out of this one.
Yep. So then they're on their way. Now it's all about getting the money to
the assessor's office.
Yeah. So that they can pay off the debt that's owed by the orphanage.
Thus begins the longest car chase in history.
Oh, my God.
And it goes.
And goes.
And then this is where it really starts to get funny. Because, the number of people chasing them, even though cop cars are just piling up all over the place, ever increases.
Yeah.
Then finally, when they finally get to the assessor's office, there's, 500 guys chasing him. And they're all running around after him.
In the building, just completely swarming the building. They stop at every doorway to pile stuff up in front of the door.
It was two chairs and then little trash cans at the top of the stairs. And there's 500 guys in the stairwell, but they can't open the door. They have to shoot the door open.
The stairwell doors open to the outside.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they get in, they pay their money.
Then they turn around.
And all the cops are there.
All the guns are pointed at them.
And the next scene is them in prison doing Jailhouse Rock. Yep.
You mentioned Paul Rubens. I saw Paul Rubens, and I was like, damn, was that Pee Wee Herman?
Yeah, he was the...
he was one of the waiters.
Waiter in the restaurant, the fine dining restaurant they went into.
I don't know who Chaka Khan was, so...
I know who Chaka Khan is. I don't remember her in the
movie. Who wants to be cool in the chat room will tell me right now. I don't like things out of nostalgia. I like things that are good. I loved Sliders when it first came out.
This isn't out of nostalgia.
But then Sliders was not good.
This isn't out of nostalgia. I like this movie. I legitimately like this movie.
Well, look at this way. There are worse movies you could do if you're looking for a laugh or a good time. I mean, you can't really go wrong with this. If you don't particularly like the action on the screen there, you can always listen to the music. It's
Yeah, just for that. For me, this movie is best watched on a Saturday afternoon when I'm halfway involved in something else, because I can stop because I know the scenes. I can come to the scene. I can quote along with the lines. Mm. I can sing along with the music if I want to. I can enjoy the explosions and the car chases. Yeah, it's not. This movie isn't about a straightforward plot, characterization, or any of that. These guys just had a good time making the movie based on the Saturday Night Live characters.
Mm-hmm. If you look at it this way, it's basically one long Saturday Night Live skit. Just kind of edited together.
And like Saturday Night Live, sometimes the joke goes on just a little bit too long, but then they break it up with some music and then everything's good for a little while.
That's what I got.
Anything else?
One thing I wanted to bring up, I can't think of it right at the moment, so give me a minute. John Landis, who directed this film, this is basically first major motion picture.
What the hell else did he do?
Well, he did
American Werewolf in London, the Thriller video.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Well, Thriller came after this.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the film that he made right after that, which ended his career essentially, Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. due to the death of the Vic Morrow.
Vic Morrow, yeah.
I don't think he ever made another one after this or after Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone the movie. Vic Morrow died during the production of it.
It was kind of a huge flop too.
Yeah, and Dan Aykroyd was in that one as well.
Yeah, I think he was only a bit part, though, if I remember. I haven't seen the thing for ages. I didn't even like it when it came out.
Yeah,
so.
he was in the ambulance.
Oh.
The cut, there was a...
Oh, yeah, he did the Phantom 309 joke.
Yeah. But yeah, there was a sequence in Twilight Zone, the movie, where there was Vic Morrow and...
Two child actors,
and he was holding them. Running through like a rice paddy or something.
Well, yeah, and there was a series of explosions going on behind them, and the helicopter that was carrying the cameras apparently got caught up in the explosion and crashed behind them, and the blades disintegrated.
I've seen the video. It's horrific because you see them in the water, and then you see the helicopter go in, and the blades just hitting where they were, and there's just nothing there. There's just like the helicopter blades hitting water and water spraying everywhere, and there were people there 1 minute and they're just not there the next. It's terrifying.
Yeah,
especially knowing that, I mean, because you saw it way after the fact.
Yeah, after that, there were stuntmen started doing more of these type scenes, and actors were not allowed to do these kind of stunts anymore because there was a huge lawsuit against Landis and the movie company for the negligence of the due to the accident, which he lost.
Oh, Landis did Coming to America?
And Trading Places, apparently.
Well, Coming to America was definitely after all that.
Oh, yeah, it was in the 90s, so.
All right, so I enjoy the Blues Brothers. I enjoy it thoroughly. It is one in a long line of Saturday Night Live skits turned into movies that I think work.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I wanted to remember to say. Afterwards, the Blues Brothers transcended the movie. The band itself, the Blues Brothers, went on to bigger successes as a stage show. They produced over about 15 albums of Blues Brothers music with Belushi and Aykroyd and their backup band.
I didn't realize they had that many albums. I thought they had one or two.
I was kind of surprised, too, that they recorded their last one in 2003, I believe, according to the Wikipedia.
Well, that would have they were still kind of doing the Blues Brothers 2000 thing at the time, which I avoided. I never
Pretty
did
much.
See that. I never saw it.
But apparently the music is still a lot better. Well, it's still very much approachable because the big blues fan in this whole thing was essentially Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
He kind of grew up in a total blues environment, and he's the one who kind of turned John Belushi onto it to help create the persona. But if you still like the movies, check out the albums too. Apparently they're pretty decent. Otherwise they wouldn't have made 15 of them.
True. Chibi says, Blues Brothers is the best adaptation of Lord of the Rings ever filmed, and I'm sticking to that.
One other thing, too. I mean, Aykroyd went on to create the Blues Brothers House of Blues nightclubs.
Yeah.
Which still enjoy an enormous great success, and are still have a radio show where he hosts.
I didn't know he hosted a radio show with that, too.
He's not dead yet?
No.
Aykroyd? No.
He's doing a pretty busy guy.
Yep. I'm sure he's going to be in Ghostbusters 3. Which is getting made.
Yay!
Just to spite you, we're doing it.
It doesn't bother me. I don't have a particular avoidance for the movie. It's just, there are a lot of people who it's some sort of sacred cow to that should grow up. It's just a movie. They're all just movies.
Well, we can all wait in anticipation to see what sort of abortion they're going to come up with, so...
You know, if you hadn't seen the first two, you wouldn't be upset by anything they did with the third. Just tossing that on the table. Mm-hmm. I don't need to.
You know what?
Nerd rage.
You know what, though? I will admit that is absolutely the truth about the X-Men movies. I would have been perfectly happy with X-Men 3. I thought X-Men 3 still had some problems, but I would not have been as dissatisfied with X3 as I had been after seeing 1 and 2.
I think that's all we got for the Blues Brothers.
I'm watching Chibi tell me why Blues Brothers is...
When Jake is released, that's Bilbo's party. The meeting with the Penguin is when Gandalf visits Frodo and tells him about the problem but offers no solution. The sequence starting at the Reverend Cleavis James's revival is the Council of Elrond, where the solution to the problem is decided on and the Fellowship is assembled. Oh my god!
That's an analysis.
Chibi has way too much time on his
hands. The Illinois Nazis are the orcs. What are the police then? I guess it could be all the wayward men. Because that chase scene was kind of the Pelennor Fields.
Cook County office is Mount Doom.
Yeah, I'll agree to that. Have you been
the $5,000 is the ring.
I'm in for that.
It is deposited at Mount Doom.
That's right.
It must be delivered to Mount Doom and thrown into the pit of tax assessment. From which it came was forged.
Wow.
We should... I agree with Chris.
We should just turn this show over to Chibi.
No kidding. I agree with Chris. We should do an episode
Mr. Chibi, why aren't you on a lecture tour right now?
Suspension of disbelief. I want to do an episode on this. Chris annoys me. His penis and his talking and his, his chat room Miami. About just because you like the movie doesn't mean it's good.
Jerry Fisher's Gollum. My precious.
Yeah,
I can see that.
That's actually pretty accurate. Precious. This is terrifyingly accurate.
Sailing into the West.
Lord of the Rings did it 87 times.
Wow.
Well, on that note, I'm out.
All right. See everyone next week when we're talking about Moon.
M-O-O-N.
How many of you got there?
Next week.
Moon.
I'm tired.
You're a pussy.